a production of South Dakota Public Broadcast.
Good morning. This is Joe Kufka in the governor's office. We are ready to begin. Governor Rounds is here, along with Lieutenant Governor Dennis Dugard and Public Safety Secretary Tom Dramlin. Governor?
Good morning. Recognizing that we're doing this on Friday morning at about 11 o'clock, we wanted to touch on a couple of items, but first of all, something that we've been working on since a couple of days ago, that is the emergency situation which is developing across our state, specifically with regard to a significant ice storm developing, along with some winter weather conditions, some high winds following. Secretary Dravland is here with us. We have issued two emergency orders, one in which we are declaring an emergency for winter weather activity. The second is a winter an emergency order allowing for the relaxation of time restrictions for people within the electric service industry so that they can have people driving vehicles for more than 40 hours during a week period. Relaxation of those allows them to get out to respond to emergency situations because of the icing which is occurring now and which will continue to occur at a greater rate over the weekend. And so before we get into the regular discussions about the legislative activity this week, I'd like to have Secretary Dravlin provide all of you with an update on the emergency situation which is developing as we speak.
Thank you, Governor, and I appreciate being here today to, again, start talking about the next winter storm that we're experiencing or going to experience in South Dakota. Seems a bit like deja vu. We've been doing this now, and this will be the third time in the last month. First thing I want to tell everybody that as of 10 o'clock this morning, we will have our Emergency Operations Center open in South Dakota to deal with whatever the results are of this next winter storm that's starting to move into South Dakota. Current weather situation is, as we have it, that we have winter storm warnings in effect currently for central, north central, northeast, and east central South Dakota today through early Monday. Winter weather advisory and winter storm watch is in effect for western South Dakota. We expect rain and freezing rain over the state today. 1/10 of an inch of ice is expected to form West River, South Dakota. Up to 3/10 of an inch of ice is expected to form in east central South Dakota, and this would be more or less in the area of Moody, Brookings, northern Lake County, and eastern Kingsbury County. Lesser amounts than 3/10 of an inch in other areas east of the Missouri River. We will be seeing a lull in precipitation on Saturday. Then starting Saturday evening and Sunday, we expect that rain and freezing rain will turn to snow north of I-90 with 4 to 8 inches of snow expected north of I-90 and 1 to 4 inches of snow expected south of I-90. At the same time the snow starts, we're going to be seeing the winds really pick up. Those winds are going to be sustained 25 to 35 Saturday evening, Sunday, and into Monday with gusts as high as 50 miles an hour. We can expect, because of that widespread blowing and drifting snow, reduced visibility, and travel will become difficult, if not impossible, in some areas of the state. This is, again, one of those storms that looks to cause some real travel issues in South Dakota. In addition to that, what the governor has all of us on high alert about is the ice. Very much a concern with the amount of ice that they're talking about building up, that we may lose more power poles than we even have as of this morning. Right now, as of 10 o'clock anyhow, South Dakota Rural Electric Association reports about 1,600 customers without power. However, more power outages are being reported by the minute. So as we see this storm ramp up from the southwest and move to the northeast, we expect more and more power outages throughout the day today and into the night. Right now, line breaks are the biggest issues. We have about 200 poles down, but expect this number to climb. The REAs and our investor-owned utilities, as well as the transmission companies, are calling additional resources in, and we have crews heading to South Dakota from Wyoming, Minnesota, North Dakota, and Nebraska currently. In terms of communications, We're seeing some intermittent dial tone outages on telephone systems in north central South Dakota. And in east central South Dakota, Venture Communications reports some phone outages. Travel conditions right now, just to give you a short update there, roads are reported as wet. Travel is reasonably good at the present time. We are seeing more and more slippery areas develop as the rain starts to ramp up and move across the state. We expect that to continue and get to the point where travel is going to become very difficult just due to ice and even some of the wind that we're experiencing, plus the fog that we have here. Some other issues that we have noted in some areas of the state, mainly north central and northwestern South Dakota, we do have power outages reported in Harding, Corson, Zeebach, Meade County, Campbell, McPherson, Walworth, Edmonds, some in Hyde and Hand, as well as Dual, Davison, Douglas, Bonham, Yankton, and Clay. So we are seeing a fairly widespread amount of outages currently. And again, as we talk, we expect those not only continue but grow. We are urging people in South Dakota to prepare for this storm. We still have some time to prepare. One of the things that I know the governor is concerned about is folks that do have medical conditions. If you are someone who needs medicine or has medical conditions that do require routine and consistent medical care, we're urging folks to get their medicine supply early. Get it as soon as they can so they have that on hand. If they know they have to see a doctor sometime this weekend, if it can be moved up to yet today, please try to get that done. Please, though, before you travel, check ahead, look at 511, look at our road condition reports, and make sure that you can do that. We are concerned about dialysis patients. We're also concerned about folks that have other significant medical issues and hope that they can take care of those needs, if at all possible, today. Governor, that's about what I have.
At this time, if there's anybody with questions for Secretary Dravlin concerning this winter weather that we expect to be receiving and that we're currently receiving in terms of ice, we'd be happy to answer those at this time.
The interstates are still open now, understand?
Right. The interstates are open. This is a little bit different than what we've had in the past over the last couple of storms. The major threat that we have to begin with is the accumulation of ice. Just for an explanation, when you exceed the 1/10 of an inch of ice and you get into the 2/10 and greater, that's when you get significant probabilities for power lines going down. The concern we've got is the forecasts are suggesting greater than that amount over a pretty substantial area within the state. Combine that with some high winds, and there's very little question but that we're going to lose power over some significant areas within the state if this all comes together the way they're forecasting right now, and it appears to be following the track that they're talking about. Critical issue will be the temperature in the areas in which the precipitation falls. We could have as much in terms of some of the forecasts, as much as a half inch of rain, but if the temperature is right and it's at freezing or below, that could be either ice or very heavy snow and slush. So their forecast as to where that line is going to be is critical. We have to prepare for both. The snow that we will have in the northern areas swinging around behind as this low departs the area, with all of the snow that we've already got on the ground, will create the opportunity for more drifting. We've pre-positioned our rotary plows. We have activated some units within the guard with some of the larger equipment, including the tow trucks, once again to be able to move the utility company's larger trucks in and around her to help them get through some fields that otherwise might not be passable. So we're trying to do our best to prepare for the type of weather conditions that we expect, but recognizing it might just be heavy rain, it might be ice, or it will eventually turn to snow as the system gradually moves out and the winds turn around and come out of the north and northwest.
You expect to have to close the interstate at some point there?
We don't know. We're prepared to do so, but once again, it's just a matter of where those temperatures are at, the icing conditions. you try to keep the interstates open as long as possible, but at the same time, there's no reason to have an interstate that you say is open if people can't get through. The first time that you get the semis out and they block it and everybody piles up behind them, then you not only have to take the semi out and move all the cars when the event is over with, you then can go in and start cleaning. But if you can close it at about the same time that it becomes impassable, you try to measure closing the interstate and when it might still almost be passable, or for people with four-wheel drives to get through, versus waiting too long and having people stranded, having to go out and get them out of their vehicles that can't move, and then having to later on delay the opening of the interstate during a time in which you're plowing around them, getting tow trucks in to move them out. And that really delays the opening again. So it's a matter of doing the right kind of management to keep the interstates closed for the least amount of time possible so that you don't delay traffic any longer than what you absolutely have to. Okay, if there's no other questions on the current weather conditions, let me just share with you a few other items at this conference. I am sorry to report that we will be losing our Chief of Staff, Neil Fulton. Neil will be leaving sometime after the legislative session. He will have the opportunity to go to work in a position that has been offered to him. I'll let Neil announce the position as he's been accepted, but he's got an opportunity to work in public service. We will miss him. He has agreed to stay on through the legislative process, and probably sometime after April 1st he'll be leaving our employment. But we wish Neil the best of luck. He was very gracious when he came in and agreed to work with us as our Chief of Staff. We're going to miss him. But once again, he will be moving into another area where he will continue in public service. And whenever he's ready to make the announcement as to where he's going publicly, we'll let him do that himself. And then finally, tourism. Last night we had our annual tourism conference and banquet. And we were able to announce some very, what I think are some very good numbers for the tourism industry and their successes across this country during this national recession. U.S. visitation, tourism visitation actually fell 7.1%. But in South Dakota, visitation actually increased 1.9% in the last visitation year of 2009. In 2009, visitors spent $962.7 million in South Dakota. That's a 0.4% decrease over 2008, while at the same time, the U.S. tourism spending fell by nearly 14% across the rest of the country. So I really I'm commending our tourism team and commending the visitor industry for the marvelous job that they did in bucking this national trend. Since 2003, we have averaged a 6.5% annual growth in visitor spending, and thank goodness that we have, because tourism created over $25 million, not including gas tax, in tax dollars for South Dakota. That's $25 million in taxes collected that citizens in South Dakota didn't have to pay. Tourism also created a total of $51 million in taxes being collected, including gas taxes, within our state. It's marvelous to be able to have an industry which brings people in, invites them into the state, and while they're here, they purchase goods and services. They allow us to create more job opportunities for people that want to live here. And at the same time, they help to keep our schools open by paying sales taxes. They help to keep our highways clean and up to speed because they're paying gas taxes as well. Sales tax and gasoline tax traceable to the visitor industry are up 8.6% and 14.4% respectively over 2008. Sales are actually up, but because gas prices fell during this last year, the total visitor spending is down because gas prices were down. Employment, the tourism industry in South Dakota employs 34,000 people within our state. And so last night we had the opportunity to thank our visitor industry team. And I also had the opportunity to thank our legislators for having the foresight to stick with us last year and to allow us to continue to properly fund the advertising and so forth to bring more people into our state. Last year it was an item of great debate and discussion, and I think they made the right move by agreeing to allow us to continue to spend money on advertising and to bring people in our state. It clearly paid dividends as compared to what happened in other states around the country. I think it was a very good move on their part. Just with that, we're here today. We know that the legislative leadership was not doing news conferences because of the weather, and they wanted to get their people home safely and not cause a problem by traveling in adverse weather conditions. We'll take just a few minutes, and if you have questions about what's going on right now, we'll just open this up for general discussions. Chet.
Governor, you mentioned the $25 million in taxes. Could you explain that in what period we're talking about there?
The time period, the fiscal year, or the we've been following these in a year-to-year basis. So in this particular case, it would be during this tourist year. And if I'm wrong on that, I'll get back with you and correct it. But I believe that this is in a time period that we consider the tourism industry, which was for the calendar year in which the tourism industry was counting the dollars, 2009 versus 2008.
Okay,
and if I'm wrong on that, I'll correct it.
Could you explain to me what the $25 million represented and what the $51 million?
Yeah, it represents sales taxes collected. The sales taxes collected on purchases, and the way that we can keep track of that is because we have a separate category in which if it's a tourism-related business, we have a tourism tax. And so those items coming in, we can keep track of. And then on the gasoline purchases, same way, this actually comes out of a Madden study, which was conducted and reported to the legislature earlier this year, I believe.
$51 million was gasoline tax.
Correct. It was gasoline taxes and let me pull it. It includes gasoline taxes and sales taxes both. So you've got $25.4 million. It's actually $25,488,000, not including gas tax, were tax receipts through tourism this last year in tax dollars for South Dakota. Tourism created $51,008,000, including gas tax.
What does the current visitor spending decrease very slightly last year? What does this mean for your goal of doubling visitor spending by 2010?
It's going to make it very difficult to meet the goal of going to $1.2 billion. But you have to recognize that we've now had two wars. We've had a major recession and record high gas prices. And yet throughout that entire process, compared to what's happened for tourism across the rest of the country, we have continued to move forward during that time. Now, we held our own this year. Basically, the decrease is being flat for a year. As I shared with the tourism industry last night, let's not just quit on it and say, okay, good enough, because we've still got the year 2010 in which to work on our goals. Let's shoot for getting at least over $1 billion to go from $600 million to over $1 billion during that same time period. So we're not going to quit. We're going to redouble our efforts. We're going to, in using the new digital revolution technologies that we have in our state to make it easier for people to come on to the state's websites and to book vacations and to book events in South Dakota, and to do a one-click, one-call type of approach to make it easier for people to find out about our attractions and to connect from one attraction to another attraction very easily. We really think that more and more people are going that direction in booking their vacations. So the emphasis will be on using the internet to allow people to more easily investigate and to make a purchase at the time that they're investigating where they want to go in South Dakota. We're connecting with a number of different areas that normally people would want to see and to participate in to make it easier for them to set up their home, their reservations, and to see the special events that are going on, and to basically combine it and make it simple, make it as easy as any place in the country to come and to have a vacation. The other thing that we found out was that people are coming, and they're simply not spending as much money on a per-day basis as what they were before. They're being more frugal. And they're also discovering that even in tough times, people will still take a vacation, and that in South Dakota, because we literally are less expensive on a per-day basis than what many other states are, this is a good place to come. And as the economy ramps back up again, and it will come around, they'll remember South Dakota, and they will come back again, and they'll spend more money the next time back. So we have to continue to promote not just the summer season, but the fall shoulder season as well. And that means more hunting opportunities, continue to bring more folks in from out of state that want to enjoy the hunting here in our state, and to continue to enjoy the quality of life that we sometimes just take for granted. The legislative process allows everybody to offer their ideas, and that's healthy. The part that we follow is the overall general mood, and we talk with individuals about what they're seeing going on in the legislative process. I continue to remind legislators that we started working on the existing budget back in September, and that we've done everything we can to slow down the growth of government for the last 3 years. The facts of the matter are that the budget that we've proposed recognizes for the third year in a row a growth in our general fund of less than 1%. Less than 1%. Those are the facts. At the same time, we've been able to maintain the reserves that we've had, in fact, the same reserves since I became governor. We actually had more in our reserves because we grew the reserves during a time frame, and we've judiciously managed their use. We have not touched those reserves since the beginning of this recession. I've advised our legislative leaders that this $32 million use of reserve funds that I'm proposing for next year is the most that I will accept. The general fund spending that has only grown at less than 1% for the last 2 years and that we're proposing for the next year, the general fund spending of less than 1% has to be maintained, and that I cannot allow them to spend more money. So I know that they're talking about making cuts, but they're also talking right now about adding back in more money for K-12. They're talking about adding back more money to further increase the property tax reductions, which are noble, but they have to have the money to do so. I have to insist that they recognize that they cannot spend more than what I have recommended. And it's going to be very difficult for them to do that. We're hoping, and we continue to, as Lieutenant Governor Dugard and I discussed earlier, we would like to have proposed a budget which has even less money coming out of the reserves for next year. But at the same time, essential services are critical. Medicaid is basically the primary place where there's been any increase. No increase for state employees, no increase for providers, no increase for nursing homes, no increase for K-12 education. Those are tough, and I think these legislators, as they go back home, they're going to have people knocking on their door saying, well, can't you just make an exception for this, and can't you just make an exception for that? And it's going to be very difficult for them to maintain that. I'll work with them, and if we can find a way to further reduce the budget, recognizing that in order to do that, they're going to have to say no to services that they've approved in the past, because we can't spend money unless they approve it. And in the past, they've directed that we spend money in these areas. If they decide that it's important not to provide those services and to save the reserve funds, we'll work with them. But they're going to have to identify the services that they want cut if they want to decrease the use of reserve funds further than what I've recommended. And once again, I will remind you, I will not accept an increase in the use of the reserve funds. The ongoing spending has to be reduced. And if you add money in for K-12, that's an ongoing spending. If you add money in for Gabriel Cutler, which is the property tax reduction, that's an ongoing spending, and it will increase their structural deficit next year. We have to insist that they not do that.
past years, the legislature has spent more money than you proposed when you signed the budgets in the end.
That's correct.
Are you threatening to veto something?
I have shared with the legislative body that while in the past I have worked with them and I have understood as they've increased my budgets by about $43 million over what I proposed. In each case, it was a matter of either increasing revenues, believing that their crystal ball was better than mine. I've tried to work with them and recognize when they've had judgment calls. We've modified some of those. And in some cases, I've agreed to allow them to, as in the case with cigarette tax money, rather than putting it all into trust funds, we've put some into direct access for education, recognizing that when they do come in, they represent the individuals that have a participatory responsibility in creating and finally proposing a finalized budget that I either have to reject, accept, or modify. In those areas, we've had a chance to modify, but we have we've agreed to reconcile our differences. This year, as I've shared with them, it's time that, number one, I'm not going to accept a strategic change in the expectation of new revenues coming in unless I also agree that there's a reason for it. So I'm going to have to be convinced any changes or increases in revenue expectations are justified. I'm going to be very, very critical of those proposals. And second of all, if they propose that we simply decrease our estimates of what our costs are going to be in the case of Medicaid, I'm going to be very, very critical of any suggestions that we can just get by and meet those mandatory programs with less money than what we know it will take. So I'll probably be a little bit harder to get along with this year if it has any suggestion of an increase in the structural deficit. And I've shared that with legislative leaders. I think they understand it. And I think they're struggling because the expectation is that they're going to come in and they're going to be able to simply take the budget. That's the beginning point. And that now that I've put it in, they can cut out fat. And bottom line is we spent about 4 months doing our best to find a way to get to zero and at the same time to maintain services that are critical. We invite their participation. But I will not allow the budget to have an increase in the structural deficit over what it already is. So we've had that discussion. I think it's a healthy discussion. And we'll look forward to working with them to find those services that they believe that they can cut and that they're willing to cut.
Is there a chance you would veto some of the cuts?
It's difficult to veto a cut because what you do is it's a line item. So what you end up doing is taking out the entire funding for a program, as I see it. So it's more along the lines of if they do not properly fund the needs that are there. If there are mandatory needs, such as Medicaid, and if our best estimates are that there is a specific cost involved in it, and we're fairly certain that our numbers are better than their numbers or than their recommendation, then I, you know, we'll do our best to convince them that that we have to take a more responsible approach than perhaps they're suggesting. There is always the possibility of a veto. I never tell people that I'm going to veto something until we have a chance to read it. I very seldom tell people I will support a specific bill unless I have the opportunity to view it as well. But I think my message to them has been pretty clear. I understand their need to start out saying that their goals, which are admirable, is to get to a zero on the use of budget reserves. But as they move in that direction, their plans have got to be concrete. They have to be responsible. They have to be doable. Very broad-based suggestions of across-the-board cuts have serious consequences because every department has a different impact. If you're in the Medicaid area, if you cut out a dollar of state funds, you cut out $2 of federal funds. And so you, in essence, make not a $1 cut, you make a $3 cut for the vast majority of the services being provided. That has to go into this discussion. At the same time, if you increase funding for K-12 K-12, you have to also recognize that that comes with an increase in property taxes as well to match it. So that has to be recognized, and that there is a shared tax plan for K-12 as well. Well, once again, we look forward to working with them, but we will insist that their plans are specific and that they recognize that we're doing the best we can to provide them with the best estimates possible. It brings up one other thought, and I have to share with you. There's a general discussion in the legislative halls, I think, about whether or not the discretion that the Constitution provides the governor with in terms of the use of the budget funds to properly take care of the programs that are authorized. And that is if we have funds under personal services and we use it for personal services versus operational expenditures, we cannot increase the amount that we spend. We do the best within the parameters provided by the Constitution to get the job done in the most meaningful way possible. And I know some of the legislators have said, well, we want to subdivide that and we want to try to make laws that say if we authorize a personal service amount of money and a operational amount of money, that you can't transfer between the two types of expenditures. And there's a reason that we have the leeway to do that and why prior legislative bodies have continued to acknowledge it. We tell them when we do it. They get a report of the transfers and so forth. But the reason that we do it is if you have some money left over in a operational account, or if you have money left over in a personnel account, and you use it for operations because you have to get the job done in order to get to the end of the year, that means that you didn't have to then have a budget. As an example, if you've got $1,000 in operations and or if you've got $900 in operations and $1,000 in personnel accounts, and you only need $900 in your personnel, but you have a budget demand that requires more in your operations, you can use the money from personnel in operations. You haven't overspent what they've authorized, but you've also not had to have $1,000 appropriated into both of your accounts to begin with, which would drive up the amount in the budget. And we think it's smarter to allow us to have the ability to manage those funds because it keeps us within a smaller budgeted and overall budgeted amount. We can't spend more than what they authorize. But by giving us the leeway to move those according to what the needs are, it means that we can be more efficient in the use of those dollars and not have to ask for more money up front. Anything else?
These are tourism numbers.
Oh.
The periods.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Let me just... Let's... I'm lost. Joe, help me a little bit here once on this. Are you looking on that? Share with me which one you're in. We want to get back to it. We want to get back to what Chet's question was on the tourism issue. Okay, staff has brought into me now. The numbers are for November 1st, 2008 to October 31, 2009, and they are from Dr. Madden's economic report. And that's the spending.
Governor,
$962.7 million.
Governor, I can confirm that's the consistently used time frame in the tourism numerical measurement year. Is that
normally that and normally that report's given by Dr. Madden to the legislature each year. And then second of all, there is this was a global data report, January through October actual, and the November and December numbers are projected, and that is a 1.2% increase in visitors. So The actual numbers on spending are Dr. Madden's numbers for the period November 1, 2008 through October 31, 2009. That's the $962.7 million. And then global data is 1.2% increase in visitors January through October, actual numbers, and then the projected November and December.
That's Global Insight, I believe.
Correct.
Is it not?
Yep.
Yeah.
Global Insight is the firm that we use to help put together our forecasting for the economic impact on our data in preparing our budget. Does that clarify for you, Chet?
Yeah.
Okay. Tom?
Another storm
yeah.
announcement.
Okay. Secretary Dravlin once again with another update.
Just not necessarily so much of an update, Governor, but just to let all of the media know that since we do have the Emergency Operations Center open, we will be announcing our regular media briefings as we get that schedule built. But I think you can all assume that as the storm ramps up, we will be providing regular and routine briefings through the media as we have during other storms. Just additionally for travelers today, since this storm is moving into the state, please, if you would remind people to slow down. It could be icy out there. Wear your seat belts and drive defensively.
Anything else? If not, thank you for your time. I know that we've got a number of folks here in the room that probably want to get on the road and get home before the rest of this winter activity commences across the state. Once again, please drive safely and please check that weather out before you leave and share the message out there, particularly to those folks that are in need or the elderly in the area. Make sure that they've got the resources they need to get through a time in which we may be without power in a number of our rural areas.